Hey guys, before we start today's show, I just want to make one quick announcement. It's kind of big, but maybe not too big. And that is that I'm going to stop doing content on comic books. If you're listening to this way in advance, you wouldn't really know about that. If you're episodes and episodes ahead, this show did have some comic book content, so that was on Dark Knights of Metal, Deceased, and the Fantastic Four. I'm going to stop doing the comic book stuff. Firstly, I want to say thank you for obviously listening to the comic book content if that applies to you. I had loads of fun with it, and it's not that I don't like comic books and I don't like podcasting about comic books, but I feel like it was holding me back when it came to anime content because I felt like I didn't really have enough confidence to make an entire show based on anime and manga alone. So I almost felt like I was filling it up, and I don't want to give you guys sort of superficial comic book content. As you can tell, the episodes were shorter, they maybe weren't as detailed. I want to put full effort into anime and manga, and that's what I'll basically be doing from now on. Again, thank you so much for listening to not only this episode, but the episodes prior, particularly those comic book episodes. Those aren't going anywhere, those will stay on the feed. You can listen to those at any time. But thank you for listening, and without further ado, here is the show for this week. Previously on Get in the Mecha. A group called NERV that works closely with the UN works prominently to take out these so-called angels. The Evangelions are these large mechas which work to take out these angels, and at the moment they are the only hope for humanity and Tokyo. And the prologue arc sets the stage for a really ambiguous story to come, which I am excited to witness. This is Get in the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Get in the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today as usual, and in today's episode we are discussing the action arc of Neon Genesis Evangelion. The action arc spans from about episode 8 to episode 12, so we'll be looking at Asuka and Asuka making her debut into the series, and a variety of other things, looking at the dynamic shift among the team, the power of three, and a heck load more. Also, I hope you enjoyed the new intro this week. I'm trying to switch things up, as you can tell from the beginning of the episode and the new intro. The show's changing slightly, but the core content will remain the same. Hopefully you guys are having a lovely day or week whenever you're listening to this. I'm actually recording this in the morning, so it's a bit of a change for me. I usually record in the evenings. This is about the day after releasing the Shambles Reborn Tokyo Ghoul episode. Sorry to ruin the illusion, but that's kind of what's going on at the moment. Recording early in the morning, I got a nice early night last night. But anyway, that doesn't matter. Let's get to the episode for this week. That is episode 19 of Get in the Mecha, the action arc. First things first, spoilers for episodes 8 to 12 or about 8 to 13 of Neon Genesis Evangelion. I can't stress that anymore, but also feel free to watch the show alongside me. I'm obviously re-watching the show, but it would be really cool if, say, someone hasn't actually watched NGE, because now it's on Netflix. Someone that actually hasn't watched NGE and they just want to use this almost as a companion guide or like a companion of analysis. Obviously, Get in the Mecha or the Get in the Mecha podcast isn't only or exclusively that, but it would be lovely if you want to sort of use this as a not definitive analysis, because it's mostly the things that I've picked up on and what I think is most important within these arcs. But it's just something to consider if you just want to watch the show, listen to the analysis as they come out. So I'll just reiterate, spoilers for episodes 8-12/8-13 of the Evangelion 1995 series. So, the action arc. The action arc sees a shift in dynamic among the characters as a new character is introduced, and that sort of tests everything else. And with that being said, let's go to a plot summary for the action arc. The prologue arc has concluded with the epic conclusion, that is, the showdown in Tokyo 3, the battle against Ramiel. We evidently ended with Ayanami's smile and sort of Shinji and Ayanami having or creating somewhat of a greater connection through that conclusion. But what if I was to tell you that that doesn't really matter anymore because we have a new member, Asuka, joining the team. Asuka is the third child, and the third child being the third person to have somewhat of a synchronization with one of the EVA units. And now she's part of the team, so we have to now navigate around that, understand who she is and what she has to offer when it comes to taking down the angels, as there's no time to mess around. From the first episode, we see angels literally attacking as soon as Asuka joins the team, so we need to get her in line and ready to fight. That was a bit of a meh plot summary, but I think that is really all there is to the action arc. There isn't crazy amounts. It is very nuanced and tiny in terms of what changes. The show feels the same just with an extra character. But again, there are some things I want to talk about, and that is why we are analyzing the action arc here today. So the action arc, as I said before at the beginning of the episode, sees a shift in dynamic between the characters. Asuka is inserted into this crew that is Nerve HQ. If we take away all the people behind the scenes, it's two people. It's Shinji and Rei. Asuka kind of cuts right through the middle. She's more on, okay, if we put this on a sort of graph or a line of 1 to 10, 10 being really energetic, 0 being completely low energy and just stoic, Asuka is probably around an 8, Shinji is probably around a 5, and Rei is probably around like a 2 or a 1. If we just consider her smile, that would probably bump her up to around a 2. Asuka definitely is polarizing. She changes the entire course of this group, because she feels as if she's a leader. She feels as if there's some sort of expectation, or she has to almost prove herself as if she's higher up or better than everybody else. We see this sort of polarization between the characters, primarily in the episode when Asuka thinks, or not even this episode, but multiple episodes, when Asuka feels as if she has to take leadership or take initiative. The reason for that is kind of the hedgehog dilemma, and the hedgehog dilemma in action, hence the name Action Arc. I don't think it has anything to actually do with that. I don't really understand why it's called the Action Arc, because there's almost action almost every single episode of Evangelion. However, I guess if you want to make that pun, then be my guest. Asuka, as I've said previously, feels like she has to take initiative. She feels as if she has to be a leader. And again, we can link that to the hedgehog dilemma. It's the idea of you kind of move closer to people with the expectation of receiving praise for it or being rewarded for it. But as we get closer towards people, we are hurt by them. We realize sort of their true nature, and then we push out. And as a result, when we push out, we feel like we need them. We're dependent on them. So we push in and the cycle continues. It's almost an infinite process. We see it very much within Shinji's character, as within the prologue arc, as I referred to back in episode 10. If you haven't seen episode 10, definitely see it before this episode. Anyway, we see that very much within Shinji, but it's very polarizing, or it's very stark between the two. It's almost calm to insanely mad and sort of enraged almost, or in a panicked state. Especially we see it in the Shamshell fight and all of that. We even see it within almost the first episode when he can't really keep his cool. But let's apply that to Asuka. Asuka, I don't feel for now in the show, doesn't apply it in that sense. If anything, she applies it in a very practical or sort of more quote-unquote real-life situation. She tries to be in front and receive praise from the people she thinks are the most important, say Kaji. And we also see that in its adverse when she almost, by becoming leader, tries to almost push away the likes of Rei and Shinji, who are, in her view, almost her competitors. She tries to push them away, but evidently that isn't possible within the Hedgehog Dilemma framework, because she needs them. And that is kind of evident in the case of the episodes within the action arc, and the whole idea of the power of three, the three of them are needed to defeat Angels. The three of them are needed to defend Tokyo 3. The three of them can't do without each other, and hence the reason why they have to help out anyway, because sure, it's protocol, but again, within the Hedgehog Dilemma framework, it wouldn't be possible if they weren't within the picture at all. That leadership position is then assumed, or we can assume it to be a facade, or not really what it seems to be. It's not existent. And evidently, she kind of knows that, because when they try to help, she doesn't just discard them, but instead she tries to take quote-unquote leadership or ownership or extreme ownership. I heard that on Jocko podcast. Those sort of things Asuka tries to do. Personally, do I like it? No. I generally don't like Asuka as a personality, not in terms of she is made badly. Don't get that confused. I just mean if I would never be friends with someone like Asuka. I just don't like her. But again, for the sake of Evangelion, she is a very necessary character, and she definitely pushes characters to a more extreme, particularly Shinji. She effectively changes Shinji as a person from one that would sort of isolate himself and get himself within his own problems, to then becoming a bit more of a concrete character and showing more emotion. I feel like Shinji isn't particularly like a Rei and sort of completely stoic, only doesn't feel any passions or anything like that. Although that was more the case in the prologue arc. I feel like the prologue arc is actually quite dark in comparison to the action arc. But then we compare that to the action arc. Shinji feels like a new guy. He is able to openly express his emotions. He's not scared of what other people are thinking per se. If anything, he's just him and reacts to situations as a normal boy of his age would do. He gets annoyed at Asuka. He gets annoyed when things happen. He's happy when things are going well. Shinji's kind of reformed as a result of Asuka emotionally. So as I said in episode 10, we're moving along this sort of spectrum of the Shinji feelingometer. I don't even remember what I called it last time, but we're moving along that sort of chain. And this is definitely a high point. This isn't a low point at all. If anything, I think Shinji is probably at his best at this part of the series, as if we get into the Bitter End, EOE, the Descent arc, things are getting darker, very dark, and it's kind of sad to see Shinji sort of drop once again. Let's talk a bit about this idea of the three, and I've been pushing this throughout the episode. It's the notion of how I feel as if we needed Asuka from the beginning, but why does it feel as if we didn't need her? Why didn't she come in episode 1? But by the time we get to episode 10 or 11 or even 12, it feels as if she was a necessary member of the team, and without her, things wouldn't happen. And one of my examples of that is the idea of miracles. And in episode 12 of Neon Genesis Evangelion, we see that sort of miracles, or almost anything is possible with these three children, as the title is called The Value of Miracles. These are things that are only possible with the Hedgehog Dilemma in play, as we can get close to people. Sure, it will result in pain further on. I guess you can argue that that is paid off by the later episodes or the final two arcs plus EOE, but it's that closeness that is only possible with the three of them together. This was meant to be a task that was almost impossible, so for them to pull something off to that extent does signify that the three is more important than the two that once existed. That links kind of to a wider point I have when it comes to not only this episode, episode 12, but episode 9 as well. It's this idea of synergy. Synergy is almost too important in Evangelion. I don't mean that in a bad way, but synergy is one of the biggest things. Without synergy on different levels, so the synergy between Eva and the child, synergy between Rei and Shinji, synergy between all three of them by the action arc, and even synergy between all three kids and the guys back at NERV, that is sort of taken a level up in the action arc, as we depend not only on one person now. Rei doesn't just depend on Shinji, and Shinji doesn't just depend on Rei. We all have to depend on each other in this really interconnected scheme of things, where the collective is just as important as the individual. Before we get too ingrained in this whole idea of the individual versus the collective in regards to the show, let's just go to the lengthy VA segment for this week. If you are new here to the show, the Link the VA segment is very simple. All I do is I find a role on my anime list for one of the voice actors for one of the characters which we're looking at. In today's episode, we're looking at Asuka. So what I'll do is I'll find them, look at the different roles of which they play, and just have a bit of fun with it, see if the voices correlate, what would happen if the two characters meet, and the list goes on. As I've said, in today's episode, we're looking at Asuka from Neon Genesis Evangelion, obviously, and the voice actor for Asuka is Yuko Miyamura, very talented voice actress. However, there aren't many roles for this voice actress that I'm very aware of. The two that struck me the most, although I don't know much about, are Kazuha from Detective Conan, as well as Kasuga from Berserk. I'm sure those two are very good voices, but I think this week, similarly to what we did 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago? It was something like that. We looked at a dub actor from Evangelion, and that's what I'm gonna do today. I'm not sure how this is gonna go, or even how it's gonna be received, mostly because I know that the dub actors were changed. I'm kind of upset about that they changed the original dub, they redubbed Evangelion for Netflix. Not too sure how to feel about that, but it is for that reason that I will be centering Link the VA around the dub ADV, so the original dub of Neon Genesis Evangelion, and for that reason, we'll be looking at Tiffany Grant. Tiffany Grant plays a variety of roles, as I say, from every voice actor or actress, which is true. So who does Tiffany Grant play? The first one that caught my eye, I didn't even watch this show, she plays what seems to be a dog called Potato. I thought she played a potato initially. I'm not even joking. I thought she played a potato. If she played a potato, I would give her 100 kudos or just all my respect completely, although she already has my respect. I would give her so much respect for playing a potato because sure, there are some voice actors and actresses that have played dogs and cats, but playing a potato is next level. Although, okay, the case is she doesn't play a potato. Potato is actually a dog from the show Air. Again, I haven't watched Air, but I just flicked it up on YouTube, saw the voice, or listened to the voice even. And I honestly say that this is one of the cutest voices ever. I don't usually call things cute, but that was cute, okay? It sounds like Pikachu, they're basically making Pika noises, but it's not Pikachu. And Potato, if you will, is just like waving around the other character. Again, I don't really know the names of these characters, sadly, but just waggling around on one of these main characters. It's a really good scene. It comes from, I believe, episode 2 of Air, so you might want to check that out if you do want to hear the dub voice. I'm really happy with that one. That is one that I didn't see coming. The second and final role for this segment is an untitled name. It's female teacher, according to Mao, from Nazunaka Nojo X. I know this segment is proving how little anime I've watched because I can go through an entire list of over probably 100 anime and not have watched a single one, or only watched about like 2 out of the hundreds that are there. So shame on me. But this role, it's a normal role. It's a PE teacher literally telling someone that their knee is bleeding. Pretty solid. That's all I can say there. But also, I think this role just gives me good memories about Nazunoka Nojo X. Nazunoka Nojo X is an amazing series, and okay, amazing maybe is a stretch, but it's definitely changing the game, or at least not what you expect. I would put it under the weird or alternative romance genre, if that's really a thing, mostly because it just doesn't really give any regards to how the typical romance develops. If anything, it has a completely different sense of progression. All I'll say is draw. Draw is the driver of this narrative. But then again, that sounds kind of cursed. Maybe it is, but it's a great show and I definitely recommend it. This segment has proven how little anime I've watched, and maybe I do need to pay a bit more attention to older anime. I have started, okay, I'll save this actually for the indie moment segment because I want to get back to Evangelion. Let's get back to the show. Back to Evangelion. As we were speaking about previously, we were talking about this notion of the collective versus the individual, and what that means in EVA. In EVA, obviously, there's this push and pull between the two, mostly, as I've said 100 times, within the Hedgehog Dilemma framework. As we want to seemingly join the collective, we get hurt by it and we push ourselves away back to being just an individual. But evidently, individualism doesn't work for us, and hence we move back to the collective, we push, pull, push, pull. It's an infinite cycle. I think EVA as a whole, or this arc at least, really does question, are we a group of individuals or are we actually a collective? And you can take that in a very extreme context. I don't really mean it politically. I just mean as people and in regards to the human condition and human nature, are we meant to be with people? The Hedgehog Dilemma would suggest neither. It's kind of like a Schrodinger's cat situation. It's neither one, it's not dead or alive, it's not one or the other. That kind of teases this whole idea of contradiction within Evangelion, a contradiction that is actually quite beautiful, as it does kind of reflect how complex things are. Things don't work as we want them to, and we don't get a straight-edged yes or no when it comes to everything. EVA proves that, and that is something that, although I'm not going to spend tangenting on about for the entire episode, I do think contradiction in both this arc and Evangelion as a whole is what makes this series what it is. So back to my point, are we simply individuals disconnected from one another? The prologue arc would probably say yes to that. Shinji is sovereign over himself. He has this ability to control how he feels to a degree. He's kind of in this gray area in regards to the show when it comes to the individual and the collective. He wants to be the collective, it seems, or he enjoys the praise, at least from the collective, which is its benefit, its approval that the collective has. He enjoys that. But then again, he doesn't really like the backlash which comes from it and the pressure which comes from it, which results with him going back to the individual and the closed off person of which he is. But again, the counter argument is obviously the action arc. The action arc challenges that by saying the collective is necessary. Without this collective conscience, or not really conscience, that's more instrumentality. But without this collective force, or at least connection between one another, things won't operate. Things don't work like that. And hence the reason why we have to cooperate with one another despite our differences in order to preserve Tokyo 3 and society as a whole. But even a character like Asuka challenges this very narrative in the way that she, again, pushes to be an individual. If anything, she's kind of the reverse of Shinji. I'm just thinking about this now. I didn't even put this in the outline for the episode. Maybe she is almost the opposite of Shinji in that sense, in terms of she strives to be an individual. She strives to stand out. Shinji doesn't particularly strive to stand out. If anything, he's fine with the status quo of just being him and being an individual, but again, loves the approval of the collective, and hence he tries to merge himself with that. Asuka is very different. Asuka wants to be, she kind of wants the approval of the collective while being an individual. If anything, she kind of wants to have her cake and eat it too. She sits on this podium of the individual, and I am the supreme. I want to be the supreme, or at least envisioned as the supreme. But again, she loves the approval of everybody else. And without that approval, she kind of just tumbles down as an individual with no approval. And an individual with no approval, in the view of Evangelion, is kind of a nobody. We've seen what someone's like when they're an individual with no approval. That is Shinji in the prologue arc, with no approval from either his dad or anybody else. Okay, maybe Misato a bit, but without that confirmation that we approve you, we think you're a great person, we praise you by doing that, that's the manifestation of that. Without that, you're simply a lonely individual sort of toggling between feelings. That was Shinji in the prologue arc. Asuka delves slightly from that, but again, that is sort of the consequence of what happens when that's not the case. If we put this in a better example, if we take someone like Kaji, who in her eyes, she really likes Kaji, he's not at least there for her, or at least looking up from the podium, take that as you will, looking up at her from the podium, then she's nothing. That is kind of the Hedgehog Dilemma in action. Without that approval of the collective, the quote-unquote collective. By collective, I just mean other people within this sort of group. If we take Nerve, if we take, you know, Rei, Shinji, Misato, Kaji, Ritsuko, those sort of characters. Without that, she's weak. So maybe this kind of goes to a more central point, and that is that maybe we are simply all the same in the way that without the collective or the approval of multiple people, let's just get that straight, without the approval of multiple people, we just remain in this gray area of nothing, and we're constantly battling with our own emotions in order to sort of prove self-worth. That applies to both characters in just the same way. Rei distorts this entire idea because she's basically a stoic. I say basically because stoic philosophy wouldn't particularly imply that, but as some stoics would say, she simply just does her duty. She doesn't feel passions or anything like that. Similarly to Gendo even. Gendo, I would say, is more hardcore stoic in terms of stoic philosophy. But I think that wraps it up on my little rant on the individual versus the collective in the show, and in particular the action arc. Moving on from that, I want to talk about a few more things before we get to the In the Moment segment and some closing thoughts. That is, there is progress on the instrumentality project. So if we're actually talking about the narrative here, there is progress in regards to the human instrumentality project, the sort of the end game of Evangelion, Gendo's goal to sort of become one, as he names it. If you're watching for the first time, we can only imply that from the definition of the word instrumentality. Instrumentality being something he makes reference to when he receives that piece from Kaji in the prologue arc. I'll be honest, I didn't really touch on that in episode 10 of the show, but we might as well touch on it now. The human instrumentality project, again, being the endgame of Evangelion, it's becoming one. I don't want to go beyond that and get into the content of the other two arcs. Don't want to get too ahead of myself. But we get a bit more sort of insight into that with Gendo going to the South Pole. Even the way he's speaking about it, we're going to look at some quotes very shortly, so I'll go into that a bit later, but Gendo sort of being, not an advocate for it, but he seems positive about this, looking at the second impact as if nothing happened. Well, okay, he doesn't re-acknowledge that nothing happened, but he doesn't seem negative about it as everyone else will. That, again, contradicts what Misato's feeling. Misato gains a personal grudge in regards to the second impact being within the South Pole. We understand now why she's, one, joined Nerve, and two, has this relationship with the second impact, as she was basically involved within it. She's almost one of the lucky ones when it comes to the entire situation. And that links me nicely into what I wanted to talk about, and that was the personal stake or the personal element of Evangelion. I think as we go forward, if it wasn't already, now I'm thinking about the prologue arc was very personalized, but Evangelion, I think, slowly becomes more and more personal the further we go into it. Again, the prologue arc proves my point completely wrong, and it was personal from the beginning. However, when it comes to this arc in particular, we kind of gain more of an understanding as to reasons why somebody wants to be a part of this effort, not particularly for instrumentality, but just serve Nerve as a whole. Misato is probably the first character to do that. Initially, I would say, though, if we subtract Shinji from this equation, which is really dumb, because why would you subtract the main character and the main emotional driver from the story? But if we are to do this, then the show, I feel, would be very detached. Rei, Gendo, Misato, without knowing her motives, it feels very emotionally detached from almost anything. Can we associate that with the genre that is dementia anime? I think we can, possibly. As we sort of go through time and through this narrative, there's sort of a twist. Dementia anime usually points towards a twist and change as we go forward. The attachment to why we're doing things, or the personal reason or justification for why we're doing things, becomes more apparent the further we go through this show. Misato, I think, is only the very beginning of this, and Ritsuko in that computer episode, episode 13, the Magi computer episode, becomes more attached because we understand a bit more about her and her family background. Overall, things are becoming more fleshed out. We understand motives a bit more, and personal stakes are more involved. And as we know, that when personal stakes are involved, things get nasty, because now when things go wrong, it's one's personality that is really on the line here. And it's not just simply how someone's job is affected or how their physical health is affected, it's their emotions. When their emotions are shattered, things can only get worse. Before we go to In the Moment, let's look at two quotes that really stood out to me when it came to the action arc. Two of which I think are probably the defining quotes, or at least some of the defining quotes of this arc for me. The first one I'll go into is kind of related to the idea of the individual and the collective. Like I said a bit earlier, I ranted on it for about 5 minutes, maybe more. Podcast listeners, feel free to tell me. Anyway, the first quote is from Ray. This comes basically at the end of the show, or not show, the arc, actually, to be specific. I wouldn't randomly pick out a quote from episode 25. This comes from the end of the arc, and she says, I quote from Rei Ayanami, "Man fears the darkness, and so he scrapes away at the edges of it with fire." That is in reference to Tokyo 3, being how we sort of comfort ourselves with technology and the developments of which we've come up with. I think we can relate that to what I was referring to before, on how we as humans, Eva talks a lot about human nature. I think it's basically a commentary on human nature and how we like to be with each other, but we also at the same time push each other away. I think that's one of the main key points when it comes to this show as a life lesson, if you want to see it as that, in terms of how we fear darkness, we fear being alone, we fear not being in the know, we fear not having knowledge almost. I might be taking this too deep, but I think we feel inclined like it's our prerogative to know and understand things. Hence the reason why in this quote, we fear darkness. When that isn't in front of us, we break down. When we don't have people with us to support us, although we have this also tendency to move away from them, when we don't have them, we break down. Prologue arc proof, Shinji without people, without that support of others, isn't really anything. In the moment, he just breaks down because of that very fear of the darkness. Asuka as well is proof of that. Without the confirmation of others, without those people there, as individualistic as you want to be as an individual or as a person, you are simply nothing. And we scrape away, as Rei says, at this idea of, again, the collective or other people or technology. We just need something to latch to. We don't like being in complete isolation because it doesn't give us anything. We don't get anything from it. Although we may feel that initially, there is still fire present within that darkness. As the famous quote goes, with light there is always darkness, or with light there is always shadow. That light is usually there to support us even when we think we're in a darker time. But when we are in complete darkness, which I think is more explored later in the show, when we are in that absolute darkness where there is nothing to help us, we are scared and we are vulnerable. The second quote comes from Gendo. This one, I feel, has more religious connotations, not direct religious connotations, but I'll just say it again. This comes from Gendo Ikari, and he says, "And yet, it is a pristine world untainted by original sin." He refers to the South Pole. What do I think of this? I think it's quite grim, mostly because he's referring to an accident that was one of the most brutal in their history, being the second impact, almost as if it's a good thing. And it's sort of untouched by the curse of civil society or whatever you want to refer to. It's pure in his mind. And I understand what he's referring to, but to call that pure is kind of twisted. Sure, there's the argument that extends to almost like not all philosophy, but a lot of philosophy and religion. This idea of original sin, we are inherently self-interested and all those other things. We are naturally interested within ourselves and self-serving. But to say a place like that is so pure gives us a weird view or insight into what Gendo's view or vision of quote-unquote pure is. What is this definition of purity in his situation if he's calling probably one of the worst places to be at that time, being destroyed by something that would never, or is almost unthinkable in our context, something in our context to be completely messed up. How does he see that as pure, as that is quote-unquote untainted by original sin? This gives us a weird view into Gendo, which I'm very excited to explore as we get into the descent arc and the bitter end. I've gone on for long enough. I've stretched these quotes to the end. I know some of them might be a stretch, a very big stretch actually, but you know what I can't stretch? I can't stretch the In The Moment segment. So let's go to that. Horrible segue, I know, but I had to do it somehow. So let's go to the In The Moment segment for this week. The In The Moment segment is very simple. I say that for all my segments because I can't make you guys not listen to these. The In The Moment segment is very simple. What I do is I just talk about what I've been reading and watching this week for a brief period. I have a lot of things. I didn't actually make a list because it would be too long. I don't actually like list what I've been reading and watching when it comes to the In The Moment, because I do make a plan for these episodes. It's not scripted, hence the reason why I can ramble on and on about the individual and collective, but I just completely explode when it comes to ideas. And that is going to apply to this segment. So I'm not going to go on for too long. I'm going to try and limit it to maybe one or two things which I'm doing. This week has been a good week for anime and manga for me. I have done two things, or I will talk about two things. One will be an anime movie. I watched Promare. Promare and the Promare review will be coming out next week on the podcast. So next week, episode 20, I'll be reviewing Promare. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that I liked the movie. I'm not going to go too far into it because I will dedicate a whole like 40 minutes to talking about that movie. All I will say is well done, Trigger. Trigger always pushes the boundaries in my opinion. The reason why I like Trigger, and more specifically why I like Nakashima, particularly in the likes of say Kill la Kill or again this movie Promare, is that it has this aura of why the heck not. Promare pushed the limits, I think, because okay, one, in terms of visuals, you will never see a movie that looks like Promare unless someone intentionally tries to make it look like Promare. I can't think of anything from what I've watched. Then again, I'm a person speaking that hasn't watched as much anime as I thought I have after that In The Moment, after doing that Link the VA segment. So maybe I'm not really in a good position to speak about this, but I don't think there is many things, or many things at all. The closest thing that looks like Promare is Tekken Toppa Gurren Lagann, obviously made, or at least has a similar vision to the likes of the Trigger works, as it was made by some of the people that went on to go to Studio Trigger after leaving Gainax. Tekken Toppa Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill, possibly Kiznaiver. Those are the few things that look kind of like Promare, but Promare as a whole, there is barely anything that looks like it. If anything, Promare looks kind of like Into the Spider-Verse, but even so, that does not look like Promare. Promare is in a league of its own when it comes to visuals, and overall, I'm just going to say, I really did like that movie. It pushes the limits in terms of it doesn't take itself too seriously. It gets to what it's good at, being action. It keeps that in the forefront, doesn't dwell too much on semantics, and it's a fun movie. If you're looking for an amazingly profound movie, then go ahead, watch NGE, as I'm talking about here. But I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for a good time. I've been wanting to watch this movie for a year, and it really impressed me, so I'm really happy about that. And the second thing I'm going to talk about, I was going to talk about multiple manga which I've been reading or read, but I'm just going to talk about one, and this is a really big one. I have decided to start my journey on Berserk. Arguably, to what I've heard from a lot of people, arguably the greatest manga of all time. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm on the Black Swordsman arc, and it's going decently well. I don't even know if decently well is grammatically correct. Anyway, the Black Swordsman arc is actually quite good. It's starting everything off, really. We get to understand Guts as a character, kind of, anyway. I'm sure there's way more to Guts than what we know. Kind of understanding his philosophy and how mercy is not a thing in his idea of anything. And also his ideas when it comes to autonomy. And if you aren't strong enough to defend your own life to the extent which you can live how you want to, then you may as well just die. That is, in summary, his view of things. It's pretty bleak. Guts does not care about anything. But that's the Black Swordsman arc. I think I'm in the transition period to the Golden Age arc, what I've been told to be the quote-unquote greatest manga arc of all time. I want to see it. I was going to watch the anime, but I've been put off not really the new stuff when it comes to Berserk, like amazingly 3D'd Berserk that we know, but just the length of everything, getting around all of it. I know the anime adaptation has mostly only gone up to the Golden Age arc and hasn't really gone past that. I want to go past that because I've heard that all of the other arcs aren't particularly as good as the Golden Age. Again, I don't know that. That's what I've been told. I'm willing to test that, and I would love to also share my thoughts on that on the podcast someday. Anyway, let's get back to the show with some closing thoughts. But first, before that, if you do enjoy the show, feel free to give us that 5-star review, or give me that 5-star review, or just any reviews at all, because I have no reviews. That would be lovely. And also be sure to subscribe to the show if you want to get these as soon as they come out on your podcast app. You can get it as soon as it comes out, pops up nicely on your phone, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also check out the blog, that is getinthemecha.home.blog. All the shows are on there as of now, all the way from episode 1 right to now episode 19. You can listen to them on the site, you can learn more about me and Get in the Mecha on the site as well. And show notes as well. I do write little notes in the show notes if you just want to get a bit of an idea as to what I will be speaking about that episode or the basic gist of it. But let's get back to the show and get some closing thoughts. So, what do I think of the action arc? I do like this arc. It is a step back in terms of the Human Instrumentality Project. That's not a bad thing. It's just to say that it's not pushing it too much. The prologue arc, as I've spoken about earlier this episode, kind of is bringing things into the forefront and bringing Shinji into the forefront. It introduces us to this idea of human instrumentality, but doesn't go further than that. This stuff in the South Pole, again, is just a slight nudge to it. As we get further into the show, it becomes more evident, but when it comes to Dementia Anime, this is the thing. It is about that slow reveal. It's about that slow twist into something darker and bleaker than we once knew. This is more than just a mecha anime, as although Hideaki Anno did say that I just wanted to make a show about mechas. Sure. It is, but this, from hindsight, is more than an anime simply about mechas, but something a lot darker than that, which we will explore as we go forward. Also, the dynamic shift is one that I'm quite happy with. Asuka, although I don't like her, being if I met her in real life, I would despise her. That's pretty dark, I'm sorry about that. But as a character, she has a lot to offer in regards to the narrative, and is changing things as we know it. Eva is changing, and as we get further into the show, it's only going to change more. Thank you for listening to this episode of Get in the Mecha. This has been episode 19. Evangelion, again, is back on the podcast. Evangelion will be on the podcast for a long time. Apologies for the stretch from episode 10 to 19. It's just, you know, I have a lot of arc analyses that I'm doing at the moment, trying to put other content together besides just Evangelion, because I can't just only do Evangelion on the show. But next time I do speak about Evangelion, I don't know if I'll be doing an arc analysis. The arc analysis series will be ongoing throughout the show. We will get to the Descent arc and the Bitter End and the EOE and everything else. That's not going anywhere, but I think next time I'm going to zoom in, when I do talk about Evangelion, on one of my favorite episodes of the show, episode 9. That will be about that episode, how that works, and just a bit more of a micro analysis, as I do want to do it a bit more. I did that with Attack on Titan. I would be down to do it with a bunch of other shows that I'm really interested in. But anyway, thank you for listening to today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Feel free to give us that lovely 5-star review. Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Have a great morning, afternoon, or whatever you're doing this week. Have a good one. And I will hopefully see you in the next episode. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows. Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, JRPG 2 Piano by Joth, 8-Bit Title Screen by Joth, and Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.